So the first question is, what is the relationship between not forcing things with willpower and right effort in our practice? So actually, the right effort, actually, you come from right understanding. When you're using willpower and you're forcing things actually without that clear comprehension, like for example, most of the times that become a habit, like whatever comes out, you know, you use willpower, you push it, and it becomes part of your habit. And without knowing, you don't have the clear comprehension. But right effort, actually, you have that wisdom, you have the clarity, you restrain because you know that, you know, that the right effort, something that is unwholesome, if I go along with it, it's going to lead me to more suffering. So we put in the right effort to stop our mind, to reframe our mind from following those unwholesome thoughts or unwholesome actions or anything that is leading us to more suffering, so that you have that clear compassion and you have that clarity, that restraint. That is a different from you using willpower or forcing or suppressing, that you don't really know that you're doing it. Sometimes you develop a habit when you used to use willpower, you're just doing it without knowing. But the right effort actually has to come from the wisdom aspect. You have the clear comprehension, you knowing that, you know, this is going to cause you more suffering. If I go along, you know, it leads me to more suffering. So we make an effort to restrain ourselves not to follow that. But willpower and forcing, that you don't even know that, you know, because you don't see that, you don't have the clarity. That's why we are doing it. We don't see that this will cause us suffering. So that is a different. Dear, when you mentioned about a friend who could see her past life, how did she achieve this level of spirituality as she's in the Bureau or Western Australia or elsewhere? Oh, she's not here. I mean, she's in Malaysia, like early days when I was still a lay person and she's also a still lay person, we used to practice together. And you know, actually, she's sometimes depends on some people, like for example, not everybody have that, like for example, like Sariputta. He's the utmost, you know, amongst the Buddha's disciples. He's wisdom, you know. So he's amongst all the disciples. He's the one having the utmost wisdom. But he don't have psychic power, you know. So actually, like, there's a few cases that someone... It doesn't mean that you remember some... It depends, you see. Even some people don't practice also, they remember that previous life. You know what I mean? So, and not necessarily that depends, you know. Even in I remember when I read this, the Brahmajala Suttas, the Buddhist mention of people have different kinds of views attached to their views. Even some people, some monks, they remember that many, many past life. And then they have the wrong view. They believe that, oh, you see, many lifetime I've been reborn. So that is a self. There is an eternal self, you know. They still have, people have the wrong view, you know, that, and that's why sometimes that, yeah, I mean, some people, and then they be able to remember their past life, and doesn't mean that it's really too much for that person. Depends on individual wisdom. We have even someone told me that there was a monk, and he remembered his past life wife, and he disrupted to marry his past life wife, you know. And I find that sometimes people try to justify, oh, because it's my past life wife. We had many wife and husband in our previous life, isn't it? And then, oh, you know, because, you know, try to justify, because this is my previous wife, you know, something special, so I got to destroy and marry her, you know, isn't it? Even people this in this very life also, how many I mean, husband and wife, you know, then it's already past, isn't it? And why we hold on to that previous life, you know? And some people keep use that as an excuse, you know, try to justify. And it depends. Sometimes, yeah, some people, you know, that they help them when they see, oh, it's a lot of suffering. And like even my friend, like, oh, she said, oh, suffering, I don't want to respond. And still, she still don't see that. She only craving that she just don't like. You know how people just don't like the bit that they don't like, but they still want to live. You understand what I mean? When they have suffering, oh, I don't want to live, you know. When it's past, they forgot, you know. I want to be reborn again, you know. And sometimes people think that they overestimate themselves. They think that, oh, I'm beyond, but not beyond, you know. So when things go not very well, then you say, oh, so much suffering, I don't want to be reborn. Everything passed, forgot. Isn't it? This is how people, you know, you don't, you know. So, yeah, this person is in Malaysia. So, this is the questions. Yeah, so, and she's, you have to have a deep meditation in order to achieve that, you know. So, but don't make that your aim, you know. You practice meditation is not to the aim to remember your past life, you know. So you practice. Even the Buddha said the Buddha considered is supra mundane, that is transcendence. That the Buddha said that is you overcome that the three outflow of the mind, the three asavas, that is that craving, the sensual craving, that is karma asava, and you craving to be exist, and the avijja asava, that is that one that the delusion. So only you overcome this, you abandon this. So he consider that you, that is the self transcendence, you know, that is beyond, that is, you know, is supra mundane. But other thing, even with psychic power, the Buddha still consider that is still mundane. You still not beyond, you know. But sometimes it's quite dangerous. Some monks they have psychic power, and then sometimes they become ego very big, because they're still not free from great hatred and delusion. They're still bound by that. Yeah, that is, you know. I know there's some, you know, even like, you know, there's a good example, like Devadatta. He's the one that he think that he's better than the Buddha, and then there's the downfall because his ego become big. You know, so don't make that to remember your past life is your aim to meditate. Okay, you see, this is the same one. Because at the back also have some question, I think. So it is my understanding that when you calm the mind, our body will relax. While we are calm and relaxed, we remain focused and maintain awareness of the present moment. Sometimes we lose our focus and awareness and fall asleep. How do we stop this from happening? Or does it just take practice? Or do we just watch it and let the body sleep and return when ready? Yes, because this sometimes when you calm your mind down, and then because when your body calming, and then your breath become more and more subtle. So as your breath become very subtle, and your mindfulness is not strong enough to be able to focus on the subtle breath, that's why, because your mindfulness is not strong enough, it's gross, and your breath is too subtle, then that's because of that you not be able to focus on that. You just like fall asleep. So then actually the best way that, you know, you can just go back to the coarser breath to make your breath a little bit coarser, just a tiny bit. Don't make it like that, because you stir up your mind and then very difficult to get your mind become peaceful again. So a little bit, just put a little bit effort into your breath and make it a little bit coarser. You have to go back to the coarser breath. Because the breath becomes too subtle, your mindfulness not strong enough to be able to focus on the breath. So you make it a little bit coarser. So sometimes if you feel still very sleepy, there is another way that you can do walking meditation. So because walking meditation is a coarser object, so you re-establish your mindfulness from a coarser object, and then slowly you develop and establish your mindfulness, then you go back to sit. Because breath is a more subtle object. Or you can go to the body scanning, you can go back to a coarser object, then you come back to the more refined, more subtle object. It's just like, you know, those soldiers that are going on battle. If you know that you can't fight, you retreat. So you accumulate, you know. So you establish your mindfulness. So okay, now you're strong enough. Again, you start again. So no need to just keep fighting. But you cannot just sit there and just leave it like that. Then you will really fall asleep, you know. So it's good that you can either go back to the coarser breath. And that's helped. So I'm a psychologist, and I have a lot of heart for my work. I find myself thinking a lot about my clients, even when not at work. For example, when meditating, any advice, please? Yes, my job, I do a lot of counseling as well. That's why, because I normally don't suck into anybody that come to me. So to me, I don't suck in. So you don't suck in, because sometimes it's a thing. A lot of people tend, if your mind is not strong enough. So that's why, like all our nuns, so they're still junior. Then we don't encourage them to do counseling. They need to build up their strength. They need to be strong enough, so not to suck in into other people's emotion. You buy in other people's emotion, and you make other people's problem becomes your problem. Actually, you know. So actually, you need to practice. You need to strengthen your mind. That's right. Even from time to time, you have to, you know, remove from your job, you know, go for a retreat, you know. Actually, because if your mind is not strong enough, you tend to get sucked in. That's why we do not encourage, like, for example, all the nuns that are training, they need to really train, they need to really establish. Because, you know, you go out, you know, I know how is it like when you go to Singapore, like people bow to you and people, like, you know, treat you like something, you know, worship you. And it's very dangerous if you're not, you know, your mind is not strong. You get sucked in and your ego become big and you go opposite. It's quite dangerous. That is the downfall of a monastic when you get sucked in into fame. You think, oh, I'm famous. Oh, these people bow to me. Oh, you know, because your mind is not strong enough. So that's why you have to strengthen your mind. So when your mind become really strong, you don't get sucked in easily because you'll be able to say no. Because you have the, when your mind is strong, you have the clarity, you don't get sucked in easily. But you're still kind to that person. Like for me, like, okay, this moment when I talk to that person, I know that I cannot solve everybody's problems. Sometimes they just want to let out, you know. So I just listen. Just I know that I may not be able to solve that person's problem, but I know that at least I can. I'd be able to care for that person, to give them the support. So I know that this is something I can do. So they say it's important that sometimes we have to know our strength. Where is our strength? You know, that what we can do, what we cannot do. Sometimes it's good to be, you know, it's good that we become someone to be helpful, but not to attach to being someone helpful and kind. You know, that is a different, you know, being kind and being attached to being kind is different. So you come with the ego, you know, I am kind, you know. So I am frugal. Yeah, like we have people that attach to being frugal, and then they become upset if other people being wasteful. And then she was very upset. You know, she makes sure that everybody don't waste the food. Make sure that you know, cut only. She will count. You know, okay, got 6 nuns. So 6 nuns, I only cut 3 kiwi. Each one got only half. Make sure they don't waste the food. So I told this person, I said, you know, look, I said, yes, being frugal is a good quality. But if you're attached to being frugal, then you're not kind. You rather, you worry about, you know, wasting the food, but you don't worry about whether it's enough food. You know, we make sure that people have enough to eat. That is really kind, isn't it? And sometimes it also takes a lot of practice too, you know. You have to strengthen your mind to be able to say no and not to get sucked in. Because if your mind is not strong enough, you get sucked in easily, you buy in. And then you keep thinking about other people's problems. Imagine, you know, I have to listen to lots of people's problems, you know, every day. And also have, you know, if I'm going to buy, if I'm going to suck in, you know, I think I'm no longer here, I've already run away. That's why it needs lots of training, you know. That's why I can. In the early days, you know, I meditate a lot in the early days, like, you know, like when I was still a junior nun. That's why we don't encourage junior nun to teach, because you're not established, you're not strong enough. It's not suitable that they shouldn't go out, because will damage the monastic life. Because people don't understand that, you know, they have to be really strong enough. Because you get affected, you know, get pulled in, you know. And then ego become really big. And Deva Tata is one of a very good example, isn't it? You get pulled in, you know. So that's like, you just have to keep practicing and strengthen your mind. So as I progress with my spiritual development, I find I have less in common with my friends and people at work. People in my life are drifting away. The more I change, and it seems so lonely. Do you have any advice as I go and change into a better person, but seems to leave everyone else behind? When I was still a lay person, I was a born Buddhist, but I don't practice until my mother passed away. Then I started to meditate, and then because before I meditate, so all my life, like, you know, socializing, get best food and all these things. But and then that's kind of happiness come from the kind of, you know, sensory pleasure. So the moment when I have the experience, the first time when I have the taste of the inner peace and inner happiness, and I can see the different of the happiness, different kind of happiness, and really draw me to this monastic life. And actually, I spend more and more time in the monastery. But actually, I don't have an idea of I want to become a nun, no. The reason why I become a nun, because I enjoy this kind of lifestyle. And I remember when I was in Thailand, I used to practice a lot of, like, in solitude and seclusion. I don't feel lonely. I feel really happy and at ease with myself. And I don't feel lonely. I have my bread with me. I don't feel lonely. You know, sometimes when you are full, you don't feel lonely. You know, if you are full, if you're full of loving kindness, you have a lot of that spiritual qualities like compassion, kindness, you have lots of love. If you feel a lot of love metta, you don't feel that lonely. Because you have a lot to give. You know, you don't feel lonely. So that's why my advice is that you develop more metta, more loving kindness. Fill your heart with lots of love. If you have lots of love, you don't feel lonely. The fact that we feel lonely because we are empty inside. If we are full, we don't feel lonely. So strengthen, you know, develop more metta, more loving kindness. So if you have lots of metta, and actually you'll be very happy because you can give. So this is my advice. Because I learned this from when I have to take up this job as an abbot. And I know that, you know, if I don't strengthen and develop more metta, I can't stay in this role. Because you have to have lots of metta. Not to be judgmental, to be able to embrace everybody, you know. Like for me, I never listen to one side of the story. I always give people, you know, like the benefit of doubt, you know. Because if someone come to me, talk about the other person, it's one side of the story. I cannot listen. It's not fair to the other person as well. So don't judge, like you embrace, you know, and try to support them, you know, with my best ability. It's not to try to get rid of people. Oh, yeah, not good enough. No, I do my best. I try my very best to help and to help all the nuns to stay in ropes, whatever support they need, and not to try to get rid of them. I'm here to support them, to give them support, to help them to stay in ropes. So that's why you need to develop lots of metta. If without metta, you can't stay. You get very agitated and irritated. You know, again, come and complain. Oh, again, I want to listen to all this problem, you know. I'm not here. You know, I remember that when I first, you know, take over the job, actually, I'm a bit scared. I was thinking, oh, do I want to do this? And because I become a nun, it's not to do this, you know. So I almost want to run away, like, you know. Then I ask myself, because I know that if I run away, I don't feel good about it. I know that I will regret in the rest of my life. I keep thinking that because I run away because I don't want to face it. I don't want to take up the responsibility. It's just like your family, you know, like your parents gone and you've been left there, and then it's, oh, I don't want to look after the family, I also run away. And then it's that kind of feelings that I feel like I have to stay back to look after the family, since like the parents is not here, so this is my responsibility to look after my family. So that's like, then when I make that decision, so I said, okay, since I made that decision to stay, no matter what, I'm just going to stick it out. Whatever difficulties that you have faced, just stick it out. You know, just keep going and keep going. So that's like someone asked me, what is the most difficult part in monastic life? I said, to inspire to become a nun is very easy. You know, still hot, you know, inspire. Ah, very nice. To keep going, to keep the fire going is the most difficult one. The practice, the persistency, the consistency. So you have to build up the strength. If you don't have the strength, it's very difficult to keep going. Especially the persistency and the consistency to keep going. To keep the fire going is very difficult, isn't it? To start the fire is easy. To keep it going is very difficult. So that's right. And that's why if you really want to continue, you know, with the spiritual developments, actually, my advice is to develop more metta, more loving kindness. And when you have lots of love, if you are full, you don't feel lonely. We only feel lonely because we are empty inside. If we are empty in our hearts, we feel lonely. If we are full with loving kindness, you don't feel lonely. Okay, Dhammasara Manasri, is it easily accessible? Meaning for a lady who uses a walker? Yes, we have our building as it's all what you call it, and we have this easy to walk, and then we have a ramp because that is the requirement of the council. So it's not a problem if someone use a walker. So we have people using walker to come to our monastery and even spend some time in our monastery. So yeah, you're most welcome. It's I enjoy listening to you this morning. Can you please tell us a little about yourself? How little? So, because every person, you know, individual perception is different, isn't it? My little and your little is different, you know. Your big and my big is different. I remember, and sometimes many years ago when I met Ajahn Khemanando, I think it's a camp. And then someone invited him to give a talk. He said, oh, it's such a big group. So he said, how big? So he said, how is your big? He said, then the person, oh, it's quite a big crowd. Then in his mind, he was thinking 200-300. But the person, a big crowd is 30. So how little you want? Huh? Yes, basically, yeah, I just give a brief introduction of myself. So I was born a Buddhist, my family, and I married, and I have a son, and my son already grown up. I have grandchildren, I have two grandchildren, one 4 years old and one 5 years old, and the second one is 2 years old. So when I decided to become a nun, and then my son was I was 40, my son 18, so he's very good. He just said, "Mom, you know, if this is really makes you happy, go for it." And of course, I never divorced my husband. I just separate because of we just into different path. You know, it just, I remember that he keep asking me like to stay and not to become a nun. So he said, I would change, I change if something wrong with me. So I told him that nothing wrong with you, something wrong with me. I said, you don't have to change. I said, you don't have to change, nothing wrong with you. And yeah, and my son is very encouraging, and actually he really feel, he's really very proud of me. And yeah, so, and I remember when I decided to become a nun, to leave, because I got only one son, and the only son, and I can see how much I attached to my son. I remember when I leave him, actually it's a quite difficult decision, you know. You know, I started to justify and started to give myself all sorts of reasons that, oh, maybe he need me. But actually, I think that actually I attached to him, it's not that he attached to me, you know. Then actually I have to work with that, you know. Even though I enjoyed that lifestyle, and on the other hand, my attachment is still there. You know, it's not that, you know, it's a graduate training. You still have attachment. It's not that your attachment just go overnight. No. So, and then, I remember to make that decision actually is just like cutting part of my flesh out, that kind of quite painful feelings that to leave my son, you know. So that's why somehow I can understand that sometimes how parents attach to the children. I can tell you it's different. Like the attachment towards my parents is less than my attachment towards my son. I normally, you know, towards the parents towards the son is more than the parents towards the children, more than the children towards the son, the attachment. That's why I can relate, I can understand. But I think it's I mean he's so proud of me. I remember that I met Pandit Sujata some years ago in Ipoh. He looked, because I know him very well, and he know my families very well. Then he asked my son, so how do you feel like you have a mother that is a nun? So, and my son told him that I'm very proud. So that's why that, you know, I think I benefit a lot. Like, for example, if I go back, my grandchildren also benefit a lot. Like, he want to offer sometimes. He want to offer. Like, sometimes the mother make drinks. He want to offer, and he bow. Actually, we never force, like, my son and my daughter-in-law, we don't force my grandchildren to do anything. Like, oh, you should bow, you should do this. Actually, he just follow. He just see the parents bow, he bow. You know, he's just happily doing it, you know. Then he always said, oh, I want to offer. Sometimes he's very nice that he go to the fridge and take out something. Grandma, I offer you this, you know. And actually, I find that it benefit my family, you know. And the my grandchildren and my son, they're really, really proud of me. So I think I'm following the right path. So I think it's enough, huh? Physical ailments, like illness connected to how we feel emotionally, if we have negative mind, does that manifest into all illness in our bodies? Actually, when we have that negative emotion, actually it does affect. For example, we have a few of our disciples, our devotees, that when before they're going through chemo. So, and normally I ask them to do more loving kindness, you know, to your body, to the people, to the doctors, to the nurses, because when you have loving kindness, when you have this, because loving kindness is a positive emotion. So when you have positive emotion, you more open up, you're more receptive. So any medication that you're more receptive, and it's work well with the body. And a few of them did really well. They said even after the chemo, they don't have vomiting, they don't feel sick, they feel really good. I think it's because come from the mind, because they have the positive mind, you know, they have this positive emotion, because there's lots of loving kindness. Because we can feel that, isn't it? When we got upset, when we got angry, how do we feel? We feel very unpleasant, you feel all that, you know, the whole body is very tight. Like, you know, even such simple thing like we crave for something is also unpleasant, isn't it? You can feel when we crave for something, we can feel our whole body is tense up when we crave something. When we let go of something, when we give up something, we can feel relaxed. And then your whole body, you know, very light. And you see, you know, imagine if you tense up like that, you know, constantly, if you're in that kind of state of mind, your body, because your body tense up, your mind is tense up also. Imagine you tense up like that. It affects your body. You know, when you're relaxed, you can feel, even you meditate, when you relax, actually, your whole body, you can feel that all your elements, all your chi is all balanced, you know, and actually, it does, you know, affect our health if we have been too negative, a lot of negative emotion. It does help if we develop positive emotion. How can I bring mindfulness practice to my children? Thank you. Actually, we don't have to deliberately, you know, train our children, because actually children themselves, because they have the purity, you know. When your mind is pure, actually you naturally, you have that clarity, you have the mindfulness. Because as we grow older, actually we have more defilements. Actually don't have to worry, you know, a child. Because as we purify our mind, as we have less and less a defilement, so actually our mind become brighter, isn't it? So actually the children, they're naturally bright. So don't have to like deliberately train them mindfulness. But to teach by example, to teach them, like to give them lots of love, So if the children grows up with lots of love, they're naturally kind and happy person. Then you don't have to deliberately train them, because you know children actually they are very bright, because they have less defilements, their mind is less cluttered like adult, you know. So you don't have to deliberately train them, but to give them lots of love, to show them how to love, to develop these spiritual qualities, the positive emotion, to develop more positive emotion. That is really important. Because when you have a loss of, when someone grow up with loss of love, and this is the positive emotion, and you are naturally happy. When you're happy, actually you have lots of energy, you know, and the energy and your mind is bright. You're more alert. You know, where for example, if someone think a lot or worry a lot, it drains lots of mental energy. So when it drains a lot of mental energy, you feel tired, and then you become depressed very easily because lack of mental energy. So that's why a negative emotion drains a lot of mental energy. Use up lots of mental energy. So when you develop, you know, more positive energy, actually it's just like charging the battery. So there is a difference between brain and mind. So mind actually is like the energy, you know. The brain is like the CPU, like the computer, you know, the CPU, you know, the CPU. And then the computer, they cannot run without battery, isn't it? So you need to keep charging. So that's why when we stress out, we need to rest. So when we develop this positive emotion, actually we are those spiritual qualities, actually we are charging the battery. So if you have lots of negative emotion, it drains up lots of energy, use up lots of energy. So you have no energy. So it's just like your battery running flat. So then sometimes when we have energy low, we can't think properly, isn't it? Our brain cannot work. The same thing. So all our skill is just like the app that we install. That's why people keep asking, what is the difference, brain and mind, you know? There is a difference. The mind actually is the energy, you know? So when you develop a positive energy, so you keep charging battery, you have lots of battery. So if you have lots of negative emotion, you are draining battery. So eventually, the battery run flat. So that's why you develop this positive energy, positive emotion. So you are charging the battery. It seems like a lot, though. So will there be an opportunity to take a photo of the four of us? Yes, no problem. So let us know when, then we'll get ready, we dress up and we make up. And could you please talk about the self-forgiveness? And teaching that may facilitate this happening, is it? So self-forgiveness. Actually, it's the self-forgiveness. Actually, is have loving kindness towards oneself, because the fact that we cannot forgive ourselves because of our sense of self, our ego. I remember because I when I was a lay person, I used to be a perfectionist, like everything had to be perfect. And I cannot stand, even I make a bit of mistake, I would get upset with myself, you know, and how stupid you are, you make such a mistake, you know. And I find it very difficult because of, it's come from the ego. If we can't forgive ourselves because of the our big ego. So actually, it takes a lot of practice, and sometimes like the fact that we're beating ourselves up because of our sense of self, because we think that we shouldn't be like that, we should be like that, you know. I remember that that early days, when I have to go through that, I find it so difficult. I find it very easy to forgive others, but not to myself. But sometimes you can do it, practice, you know, and make it a habit, like conditioning yourself, deliberately doing it is also helpful. Sometimes when you sit before you sit, you know, you can do forgiveness, you know, bring those in mind that, you know, that causes you difficulties, and you practice, you know, forgiveness that I be able to forgive this person. And you deliberately bring that, you know, asking for forgiveness. If you have hurt other people, then you bring the person in mind that you forgive that person, and imagining that you're holding flowers in Zen, that you ask for forgiveness. And also you do forgiveness towards yourself, and you can do it deliberately. You know, it's just a part, like, actually we all been brainwashed. Even now you're listening to me also, I try to brainwash you, you know. So you just brainwash yourself, you know. It's for example, how I brainwash myself, you know, like early days is quite difficult because my training was really very strict, very, very strict. Like, you know, you just get told off easily, and then, you know, you get hurt, you know. And then I find that, you know, I have to develop my devotion towards my teacher. Then actually I do that deliberately. Every morning when I have my breakfast, you know, the first bite, I bring my teacher to mind and to contemplate and reflect on the good qualities of my teacher, and to develop that devotion towards her, because I know that I cannot stay in monastic life if I have no devotion towards my teacher. I have to develop that, you know. So I do the three bites practice. So the first bite, I develop that devotion. And the second bite, I develop gratitude, thinking that, you know, the fact that, you know, that I'd be able to stay here, you know, and people preparing the food, and, you know, and I have all the food, you know, all the beings who prepare the food, all beings that contribute in those food, I really appreciate, you know, the meal that I have, you know, the opportunities I'd be able to practice, you know, I reflect on those things. And that's to develop gratitude, to have being appreciative. And the third bite, I develop like kindness, loving kindness to all beings. So I share all the merits I have made through my practice to all beings everywhere. I do that every morning. Each time I start my breakfast, I do this before I eat. You know, I take my first bite, so I reflect on that. So develop this. And actually it helped. This is how you develop this quality, because we are all conditioning. We condition ourselves, but in a good way, to develop these spiritual qualities. So you can do that, you know. Then you can do even like forgiveness, and you reflect on that, you know. You can bring it, you know. Actually, you can do it each time you sit. Like, you know, you do forgiveness ceremony in your mind before you sit, then it slowly you change. So it's one of the saying that you fake it until you make it, isn't it? It does help, but you have to be patient. It will not happen overnight, you know, slowly. And also you can reflect on that, like be able to forgive, you know, ourselves. Actually, it's being kind to ourselves. You know, sometimes, like, you know, you are not being kind to ourselves, like, you know. So we reflect on that. It's two more metta. Is metta also help with self-forgiveness? Two more metta. That's like when you do metta, before you do metta, you can do forgiveness. Bring your, you know, do forgiveness before you do metta. It's also help. Apparently Ajahn Brahm had some problem with bhikkhuni ordination. What and why was there a problem? I have seen printed that when he was asked in hindsight, would you have done things different? He replied that I don't do hindsight. How good was that? So I'm not quite sure what you want to know about that, because it's already passed. That, you know, there's a bit of controversy. Some people think that, you know, that the bhikkhuni, you know, these orders already die out, and some people agree, some people disagree. But honestly speaking, when someone asked me, do you aware that this will lead to all this controversy? I said, no, I never thought of that. For me, my intention, my motive was, I just want to purify my virtue to support my practice, that's all. I said, but I how do I know would lead to all this? I said, but I normally, actually so far we never said anything, reply. I never reply and really answer whatever people said. They can say whatever they like. So that's why I remember it's also big discussion. Then I told my sister, I said, don't worry about that. I said, whatever people said, just let them say. I said, why they worry about me? If I'm really doing that thing, you know, I'm the one who's responsible for my own karma. It's not them. I said, isn't it? Why you worry about this? I'm the one who can do. If I'm really doing horrible thing, I'm the one who's responsible for my own karma. It's not other people. I said. So we don't want to say anything also to have that karma too. Like people got angry and got upset, you know. So and then things pass, you know, and yeah, it's already passed. So I get many creative ideas when meditating, for paintings and poems, etc., or insight. I don't want to block this coming to me, but I find it harder to let go of good ideas when meditating compared to negative thoughts. Do you have any advice? Actually, it's not good or bad, but you will not go deep. That's all. Because your mind will not go deep. You just say that, yeah, you know, you feel happy a bit, you know, you get idea, you know. But depends on how deep you want to go. If you really want to go deep, then you have to learn to let that go. If you it's up to individual. You know, how deep you want to go, how far you want to go. You know, that if you just still take, not be able to let go of that, because when you're peaceful and calm, your mind have more clarity. That's why all these things will pop up. And but you know, and this is not really you will not go deep. You know, you just maintain that. You know, it's just your practice will be on surface only. You know, you will never go deep. So it's just up to you. How deep do you want to go? If you want to go deep, you have to let that go. Dear Venerable, my wife and I plan to join the Sangha 5 years from now. Our two sons are 16 and 19 years old. We meditate every day and try to live a simple and peaceful life till our sons can be independent. Can you please guide us what would be the best way to leave them, and at what stage should we leave them, and how to settle things properly and join the Sangha so we need not have to go back? Thank you. Okay. And because, honestly speaking, I'm not a planning person. I don't plan things. Truly, you know, I'm normally, you know what I do? I have an idea what to do. You ask the nuns, they don't know until last minute I tell them. Even come for the retreat, I always last minute I tell them who to come. They never know. You know, life is, you know, you can plan and plan, but sometimes things happen. You know, that, you know, that, because I know that, you know, no matter how I try to plan, you know, this and that. And then sometimes things always turns out, you know, otherwise. What I expected to be is always otherwise. So why I bother so much? But I do have an idea. Of course, you can do a little bit of planning. You know, for example, if you plan to go to Thailand, you have to book a ticket, isn't it? You cannot just turn up at the airport and say, I want to go to Thailand, you know. So, of course, you have that bit of planning, but I'm not, like, into too much because I don't even know whether I'm still alive tomorrow. So why I waste my time? So when times is right, you know what to do. So, yeah, it's 5 years, you know. We don't even know whether we have 5 years to live, isn't it? No one knows. So just, you know, just relax. And I think 19 years old is big, though. 16 is a bit still young. 19 is, you know, is grow up. And, yeah, they can look after themselves, you know. Just let them look after themselves and, you know, and actually don't have to worry so much. Sometimes also you just, you know, bring your mind back to this present moment awareness. Actually, a lot of people worry about the future. Actually, no one knows what is going to happen next, isn't it? So actually, what we are now is what we have been. So what we will be is what we are now. So if you want to your life, you want to have your future, you know, you want to be happy. So first of all, so this, you live well in this moment. So if you live well in this moment, it's more likely that you live well in the next moment, in the next, and the next, and in the future. So bring your mind back to this moment. Just live well this moment. Take one moment at a time, and step at a time, and one day at a time. So, yeah, and it just seems that I'm the wrong person to ask because I don't plan. So, dear Venerable, after experiencing deep stillness, what is the most shocking, head-turning things you have experienced? Appreciate if you could talk a bit about this. Shocking, turning things you have experienced. So actually, normally, as a monastic, we have a rule that normally we don't talk about our meditations. You know, only we talk to our teachers, but not in public, and also to other people. So that is, as is in one of our rules, that's what normally we don't talk about a practice, you know, with others, and unless if the nuns, fellow nuns, or the teacher. Okay. So we have been taught to do what? I can't understand. If we have been taught to DIS, is it F or T or I can't read. How do we know we can? Oh, trust. If we have been taught to distrust, because no, don't have the R. That's why I said what was this. So, how do we know we can trust? How can the trust? How can we trust the Dharma? Yeah. So basically, if you don't trust anything, you won't trust anything. You know? Then, you know, it's just like the Buddha said, like, you know, like in the Kalama Suttas, he said that, you know, even though he said that we don't simply believe what people said, but also you don't simply disbelieve, isn't it? So it's always good to leave it open. So if we think that we know, then we close off. If we leave it open, we learn more. So, and but if you don't trust, if you've been taught that you don't trust, then you close yourself off. You don't have to believe, even you don't have to believe what I said, you know. But, you know, you just leave it open. And ultimately, you have to develop your own wisdom, your own understanding, and to discriminate what is true, what is right, you know. And ultimately, you have to develop your wisdom in order to trust the Dhamma. The confidence actually is come from your own wisdom. So when you develop the wisdom, you have the insight. So then you have the faith. You have the trust in the Dhamma. Until you develop that, you basically, you know, you just, whatever people said, your mind just swear. Maybe this person said, oh, it's true. That person said, it's true. You know, and yeah, you can't trust. You can't even trust yourself. How can you trust? You know, so you'll be able to trust Dharma until you develop that wisdom. You know, the wisdom actually, and then you have the confidence in yourself and also in the Dharma. So if you haven't got the wisdom, it's quite difficult to have the trust in the Dharma. I hope this answers the question. So is meditation powerful enough to combat mental illness, anxiety without the need for medication? So sometimes if you need medication, you don't stop the medication. Because I tell you not to take medication, I'm in trouble. Okay? You have to continue to take medication if you need be. But definitely if you meditate, it will help, you know, will help your anxieties, but you have to continue to your medication. But you can ask your doctor that maybe can reduce, you know, but you cannot just stop. We have someone think that, oh, I just meditate, oh, I can just stop my medication. You can't just stop, because meditation is very slow, it's gradual. You cannot just stop and, oh, I'm just meditating, I don't have to take medication. No, you have to take, you know, until, you know, you have developed, because it takes time, because meditation is very slow. So before you have strengthened your mind, established, you know, your mind, you cannot just stop medication, okay? What it is to become Sotapanna, how will we know when he has occurred? Sotapanna, that is a first stage of enlightenment. So someone, first stage of enlightenment, they have abandoned the three lower factors, that is a person, you know, have the complete faith, the complete confidence in the Dhamma, unshakable, and they were not reborn in a lower realm. And I can tell you, if someone enlightened will not tell you that they're enlightened. If someone tell you they're enlightened, they're definitely not enlightened, okay? So you will never know. Even during, you know, Buddha's time, people don't even know the Buddha's right in front of him. Because when your ego becomes small, you know, you're very humble. You know, like those, you know, those well-practiced, those great monks, they look really ordinary. They're very humble because of small ego. You don't have, you know, they have big ego. So someone enlightened would never let you know they're enlightened. If someone tell you they're enlightened, I can guarantee they are not enlightened. Okay? And also, I remember Chikwan Sunyin, her teacher said to her that, You never tell people that you enlightened. If not, you spend your whole life to prove it. Isn't it? You can tell people that constantly. People say, how come I believe you? You have to prove that you enlightened. So you'd be very busy. You spend your whole life trying to prove to people that you're enlightened. So enjoy your Dharma talk this morning. Very much. Thank you. Thank you. Where does an ape go when he wants to get fit? So it's a farm, alpha. Okay, this, I don't know what this is. Sorry for that. With regards to the five precepts, do I have to become vegetarian and not having others? Does that mean letting poisonous spiders live around my children? Okay. No, so, I mean the five precepts, you don't have to become a vegetarian. Like for us, like we just like for example, like for us, we just eat what needs to, what's being offered. So is you don't have to become a vegetarian, and not harming others. Does that mean that letting poisonous spiders live around my children? Yes, this is not an easy solution, because I remember many years ago there was a question, and this question was that when this person first dog died, they're having a terminal illness, they decided, you know, not to put the dog down. Then after that, they regret. They feel that, you know, it's being not kind to the dog because the dog suffers so much. Then the second dog also having terminal illness. And this time, they decided to put the dog down. And then they also think that it's not right. Yeah. And then they said, then another person said, you know, then how am I going to practice the first precept, not harming? You know, my house, you know, we have termite problem. I can't let the termite, you know, to eat my whole house, you know. So actually, this is not an easy solution. The fact that we've been born, you know, that's unavoidable. That is, no matter how hard we try, we always, you know, unavoidable to live on the expense of others. So the only way that we get out is not to be reborn. There is the only way out. Even the Buddha can say sometimes it's difficult. But what is contribute to what is really called killing? Like, because we have the precept, like we have our rules that, you know, like you it's a defeat to offense if you kill a human being, you be killed, you know. But even you kill a human being, you have to fulfill the five conditions. So you have to have the motive, intention, you have to complete the act, you have to have the object, you know, you have to have the object is there, and the fact that, and then you have completed your action, and then the fact that because of your action, the person died. Then only is considered, you fulfill that, then it's killing. So we just ask ourselves, do you have any intention to kill? If you don't have, then, you know, sometimes, like, none of us can practice Buddhism and we walk, we might step on the ants, you know, ants everywhere, you know. But we just ask ourselves, do we have the intention, you know? Because the intention is to drive us, you know, that anger, you know, that drive us to commit unwholesome deed. So it's always go back to your intention. But of course, we might, you know, sometimes unintentionally step on ants and things like that. But we cannot help it. This is, you know, like for example, with our building also, you know, you clear the land, some creatures die. So, and this is part of being sansara. That's why the Buddha said the first noble truth. Inherently unsatisfactory, no matter how hard you try. It's part of life. Sometimes you have to make a very difficult decision whether you like it or not. So always go back to your motive. Do you have the intention? Do you have that intention that I want to kill? I want to harm? You know. But of course, like, you know, whatever we do, we're bound to the causes, you know. It is unavoidable that, you know, some creature die, you know, even be built, you know. You know, we have to clear the land, you know. Some creature dies. So that's why, like Ajahn Brahm said, you know, the bhikkhuni is also a rare species, so we have to preserve that. So that's why sometimes in life, you just you know, you just have to, you know, you cannot avoid, you know. So the only way that, you know, that to really not to the, I mean, to have this suffering, then is not to be reborn. It's part of in the samsara. You see, you can see a bigger animals that eat the smaller animals. So if not, they die, isn't it? That's part of the whole cycle. You know, that's part of life. You see, there's no easy solution. We can only do our best to minimize harm and the, you know, harming others, or especially deliberately, you know, do the act to harm someone else, you know, or the living beings, you know. How often, many hours a day, do monks and nuns meditate? So usually in a monastery, we encourage people at least minimum 4 hours to 6 hours. But 10 or 8 hours is optional. You can meditate more than that, but we encourage minimum 4 to 6 hours is the minimum. My son has always had a negative thought process. He's now a teenager, and I can see these thoughts are affecting his mental health. What kind of meditation could he do to make his thoughts positive? So, do loving kindness meditation, more metta. And tomorrow, we will have a guided meditation, loving kindness meditation. So are teddy bears into meditation? Is that why they are all present? I don't know. Actually, I was surprised there's so many teddy bears here. I think Ajahn Ram said, oh, you can, if you feel that, you know, some days you feel like you want to hug teddy bear, it's okay. You can hug the teddy bear. But yes, I don't know. I don't know either. Sometimes it's good that I learn to say, I don't know. I don't have to know everything. I remember that, you know, that many years ago, I went for this Dalai Lama talk. It's a public talk. I remember someone asked him a question, and he just, I don't know. To me, it's such a profound teaching, isn't it? Then I realized that, wow, I said, yeah, we don't have to know everything. It's okay that we don't know. Sometimes we don't have to pretend that we know. Is that we don't know? We said we don't know. Sometimes, you know, we think we know, actually we close off, isn't it? We know everything. But if we don't know, actually we are more open. We learn more if we don't know. So when, if we think that we know, we close off. If we think that we don't know, we are more open, we learn more. How can I, as a lay Buddhist, endeavor to incorporate daily meditations in my life? I have young children, and so long days without much time, I want to practice meditation daily, but can't seem to work out when to. Actually, if you can find time, you know, and also, you can, like, little things, like in the morning when you get up, you know, you just get up a little bit early, you know, and you can do, like, just now I suggested that the three bikes practice, you slow your mind down, and throughout, you know, in your daily life, you know, try to do one thing at a time, you know, try to focus on what you are doing, and try to develop the habit of just try to do one thing at a time, and try to apply that in your daily life to be more present, and then try to train your mind to stop. Sometimes you can just sit there in your office, one moment, close your eyes, stop, isn't it? Imagine you have a few moments, you know, you just stop a few moments. Imagine one day you have many moments, you know. So you can, you know, like for me, even though no matter how busy I am, I still find time, because you can prioritize, you know, your job, your work, you know, what's, you know, to me, like, I prioritize what is important and then what is need to be done. And that one, I worry about it tomorrow, you know. So I better stop. I have to stop to meditate. I stop to meditate. You know? Because the problem is sometimes we this is how, like, we don't want to change our lifestyle. We try to fit the Dharma into our life. But we should do it the other way around. You know, we should fit, you know, we don't try to fit the Dharma into our life, but actually the other way, our life into the Dharma. Change your lifestyle. You know, then this is, you will find time. Like, for example, you see, sometimes you see, like, for example, I've seen people that something they like, you know, they always find time, isn't it? Somehow they have time for it, you know. So if a situation causes you suffering, do you continue to put yourself in that position that will continue to cause suffering? So it's just things that, you know, you have to see. You have to have to, like the Buddha said, you know, there are some things that you do that you suffer now that will free you in the future. You'll be happy in the future. Some of the things that you suffer now and you also suffer in the future. And some of the things that you're happy now, then you will suffer in the future. And some of the things that you do, you're happy now, you're happy in the future. For example, if for example, if we have unwholesome thoughts, negative thoughts, you know, we then all our craving, you know, we crave for things that, you know, and then when we said no to craving, lots of suffering, isn't it? But when we restrain ourselves, we said no to our defilements, you know. Yes, you suffer now, then, but eventually we free ourselves, isn't it? Because it's unpleasant now, we suffer. We can't get what we want, we suffer. But if, you know, if we understand that we restrain our craving, then in the future, be happy in the future. So, and then, like, some of the things that the Buddha said, that we know that is unwholesome, you know, and for example, anger, you know, we know that we're feeding our anger, you know, then when we're angry, it's unpleasant. We suffer, isn't it, when we're angry? But if we react to our anger, we're feeding our anger, so we will suffer now and in the future. And the things that we do, like, you know, keeping the precept, you know, restrain ourselves, you know, meditate, you know, when we sit in meditation, or we listen to a Dharma talk, or we practice generosity, that, like, this kind of action that bring us happiness now, and this also bring us happiness in the future. So that's like, of course, you see, if the situation causes the suffering, so we have to see what are the situation. You see, the situation that causes you suffer now and also in the future, then definitely you won't do it. But if the situation that you suffer now, but you are free, you'll be happy in the future, then of course you will not, you know, you continue to put yourself in that position. If you know that, you know, like, you know, if I restrain myself, I endure a little bit, you know, with the suffering of not getting things, you know, but eventually, you know, I'll be happy in the future. Do we each have a personal Dharma to be followed or fulfilled in this life? I don't quite get it. What is personal Dharma to be followed or fulfilled in this life? I don't really get what's trying to ask. Okay. Sorry about that. What is the soul? So in Buddhism, we don't believe in soul. lives. So it's just like the eternal that self is there, is, you know, that is something, you know, but because Buddhism, we talk about non-self, so soul is something that is, you know, eternal. So thank you for the retreat. And during walking meditation, doer on what, straighten their leg, or is it a bit wobbly? Straighten their leg, or is it a bit wobbly? I can't. During walking meditation, does on straighten their leg, or is it a bit wobbly? So what is this question trying to ask? Okay. During walking meditation, does on straighten their leg? Huh? Straighten the leg. You straighten the leg, or is it a bit wobbly? You mean that you make your leg like that and you become wobbly? You straighten your leg. Like that, huh? Okay. Oh, you can't walk like that. You will fall. So you just actually, for walking meditation, just do it naturally. Just natural. You don't have to deliberately, you know, to do it. Just natural. Just, you know, focus your mind on your movement. You know, just like natural how you walk. You know, just natural. Just be natural. Don't try to, you know, straighten. You can't walk your leg with, you know, straighten your leg like that. So what I think yesterday when we said that, it's just that when you lift and you move your leg, it's not straighten your leg, you move your leg forward. This is how you walk, isn't it? You lift your leg, you move your leg forward, you put it down, but you don't make your leg straighten and put it down. It's just natural, okay? Does it have an impact on the lower back spine? If I can't read, sorry, you know, I can't read. A release has not been done properly. Is there a remedy to fully open release that? I can't read these words, you know. Can someone read these words? It's what energy? I can't see this. Care, or can you read what is these words? I can't understand. Can you see what is this? Care.
During Kundalini rising, does it have an impact on the lower back spine?
Okay.
If the Kundalini release has not been done properly.
The problem is I don't know what is Kundalini. The problem is I don't know what is Kundalini rising. This I said, what is Kundalini? I don't know what is Kundalini rising. Does it have an impact on the lower back spines if the Kundalini release has been done properly? Is there a remedy to fully open and release the Kundalini? Sorry, I don't even know what is Kundalini, so I cannot answer you this question. Sorry, I don't know. How can a Buddhist help spread the Dharma without being forceful to another person? Isn't it forceful? You can't. You force someone, they run away. Isn't it? I remember early days, you know, when I first started to practice, you know, then I find that, you know, I'm very helpful, you know, and always convince my friends, you know, and then, you know, tell them, oh, Dharma, give them book and this. And people see me, they run away. People scared, you know. Actually, sometimes it's good that through you have the best to really, you know, to spread the Dharma. Actually, you yourself, you know, how you behave. You know, that through your own practice, teaching by example. People say, oh, this person so peaceful, so calm, and so happy. Oh, they will ask you, what is the recipe that you're so happy? Isn't it? Oh, because I'm a Buddhist, I practice meditation. Isn't it? That's the best advertisement. Okay. So what is the rationale for not eating afternoon, and why are there some food, example chocolate and lollies, that are allowed? There's a like, because like not eating, there's a, we don't eat afternoon because of like sometimes when we eating too much, and sometimes we really got lazy, you know. And sometimes, yeah, and then also, and it's part of the rules. But we find it, I'm good and the restraint, so we don't, actually, we don't need to eat so much. Actually, I find that it's quite healthy to me, like, you know, it's part of the rules, you know. And sometimes chocolate and lollies to give us some energy. Sometimes we work in the evening or whatever, in the afternoon, to give us some, you know, But sometimes now we used to it. If we can't eat too, you know, if I eat too full, also I can't really sit. Isn't it? When you're too full, you can't even meditate. That's why sometimes even in early days, you know, even I don't eat after midday. Sometimes if my lunch, if I eat too much, I find that I can't sit. I have to do at least 2 hours walking meditation before I can sit, because I can't sit, my stomach just so full. So I have to walk 2 hours before I can sit, you know. So I find it difficult to hear. Could you amplify the sound? So can you hear me now? So why do we always return to the breath in meditation? So actually the breath itself is just an anchor point. We use that as an anchor point because a breath itself, like it's not like you, it's helped you to so that you don't think so much, you know, that reduce it to so that you will not draw into thinking. So you go to the breath, and breath is something neutral, you know, so that you, when it's just an anchor point, it's just an object, because the mind, you know, you cannot, the mind always need to hold on to something, has something to do. So the breath is just an anchor point for you to focus, to train your mind to be still. Eventually, when you're in the deep state of mind, actually you let go of the breath. You know, there's different stages, you know. At first you have to establish your present moment awareness before you can you establish a present moment awareness. You very difficult for you to focus on breath. So when you focus on breath, as you go deeper, actually it's the whole path of letting go. Then eventually your breath disappear. Then you experiencing feelings. Then eventually your feelings also disappear. The feelings like pity, sukha, and it disappear. Then you're experiencing the mind that is in the limita and jhana stage. So it's just that you keep letting go, but you start with the breath, you know. So you have to keep letting go. So the breath is just an anchor point for you to focus, to still your mind. So eventually your mind become more and more still. So you even let go, that you don't experience breath anymore. Is it possible to make great spiritual progress in this lifetime if one chooses the path of marriage and children? I'm at a crossroads whether to take family path or not. Actually, it depends on whether you're ready. because we have people come to this path, you know, and they disrobe because they cannot let go of the family. You know, they come when they become a nun, and they find that they're still attached to the family, and they go back to the lay life. And if you're not ready, you force yourself to come to become a monastic, and you are so not happy, and then you will not have progress also when you're not happy, isn't it? So that's like I normally don't convince people to become a nuns, you know. That I have to come, and then usually people come and ask me, you know, to help them to make decision. So I said, you know, you have to come from your own understanding, your own wisdom, you know, that you take up this spiritual life, this monastic life. So then you're happily keeping all the rules. But if you're doing it because I said, oh, it's very good for you, I tried to convince, I said, oh, you know, become a nun is good. Oh, come on, give it a try, very good, you know. I tried to convince you. But you will not really benefit. It's not because you don't have the understanding why you're living this life. And you will not benefit living this monastic life. So have to come from your own understanding and your wisdom as well. Also you are ready. So we have people, you know, they try to force themselves, you know, that say, oh, you know, they try to sit on two chairs, you know, one leg inside. I want to become a nun. I want to live the monastic life, but I cannot let go of my family. I always want to go back to see my family. You can't. You have to let that go. So that's why you have to ask yourself, are you really ready? You really let go? So if you're not let go, so it doesn't mean that, you know, like, you know, even during Buddha's time, like, there are lay people that they have attained like a first stage, second stage of enlightenment, you know, in their lay life, you know, because some people they not be able to become a monastic because of the condition. They have to look after the parents or whatever, you know, and they still have responsibility. So yeah, I think finish. It's a lot. So you want to take photos? You want to take it now? Tomorrow? You want to take photo now? Tomorrow. So those is still inspired, want to continue to meditate, you can continue to meditate. Or you think that it's tired, and you're tired, so you go back to rest. And good night, and thank you for listening.